Hi, it's Greg and Lucky.
And this is our podcast. If you don't catch us from 5 to 9, this is what you missed.
I was at the grocery store yesterday. I was talking to the lady behind the cash and said, do you think these screens, the plexiglass, is going to come down when this is all said and done? She said, no, probably not. She said, it's amazing. The numbers are way down on staff calling in sick. Since those screens have gone up. Just your common colds, you know, just... She goes, you can't imagine the amount of times we're checking people's groceries through and someone coughs on us or sneezes at us.
I was talking to kids who were at the eye doctor this week for their checkup. And he had, you know, a screen on, you know, how they get close and they have to check whether or not you need a prescription or anything of any sort. And they kind of look into your eye, the microscope. And he has, you know, this new screen on it. I said, you know, it's amazing that that wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, absolutely. He said, like, how many people would just come in, even if they had a cold, and they wouldn't skip an appointment? And he said, I'm face-to-face with these people inches away.
Breathing on them.
Even for just bad breath, you'd think now. That's probably a good thing.
Yeah. I think those screens are there to stay for sure. Half of people say they've done a great job following coronavirus rules, like wearing masks and social distancing, but other people in their community haven't. They also found a quarter of people admit they've been in a recent situation where they should have worn a mask or socially distanced, but they didn't. I'd been in my car going to the grocery store, pulled into the parking lot, looked down, realized my mask wasn't there, and then had to turn around and go home, and I'm furious. Oh, for crying out loud.
I always have a couple of spare ones up in the visor.
Yeah.
Some of the disposable ones. Just for that kind of emergency situation. And you know, I think, more and more, and I kind of thought this from the start of this whole pandemic, that there's an awkwardness to it, to social situations. And this is presenting a new awkwardness as well. Where, you know, you might be diligent. Everyone's got their own story in this, I understand, and their own comfort level and fears with it. And you'll walk into a certain social situation where maybe you'll have your mask on, but nobody else does.
See, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I'm not talking about in a store.
Okay.
We're talking about if you're going to the golf course or something like that.
Sure.
Or in a group setting. Right. You show up in the parking lot, you got your mask ready, throw it on, you get there and the rest of your group doesn't have it on.
Yeah, nobody does.
And so now you're kind of faced with this decision of, well, do I keep my mask on or do I take it off to fit in with the rest? Or am I making other people uncomfortable and thinking that they got to put theirs on? It's a weird mental play.
Yeah, the golf course is odd because it's outdoors. I think people get confused about that, right? Well, we're outside, so we're fine. But, yeah, you're not necessarily if you're still hovering around one another.
Well, and that's, the guideline is that if you can't keep your distance, put a mask on, right?
Yep.
That's the recommendation, I guess, is what they're saying. And so, some people, they step outside, and the minute they're outdoors, rip it off, and it's like a freedom thing. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean we still are learning about how this thing has passed.
I do that, though. I'll come out of the grocery store or anywhere I've been indoors and I've had the mask on, and I'll come outside and I'll whip it off like I'm a surgeon coming out of surgery.
Right.
I saved the patient. pandemic fatigue definitely setting in as more and more months pass. People are more likely to go to public places or have small get-togethers with family and friends. I'll tell you what, it is going to be absolute chaos come this Christmas if the government starts telling us you can't see your family. People are going to lose their mind.
Well, it's all based on numbers, too.
Yeah.
Right? You know, if we're still in the midst of this second wave and numbers peaking around 1,000 cases a day, then the recommendation obviously is going to be, keep it tight and don't spread outside of your household. And people aren't going to want to hear it. They don't want to hear it now. They're not going to want to hear it, especially at Christmas time. But the hope is that, tighten up now and maybe things will get down. And I'm glad to see Durham, who was having cases in the 50s on the weekend, they're now coming back down into the 20s. Hopefully that Thanksgiving spike is over.
Yeah, I really don't think there's going to be any change until there's a vaccine. Look, you know, you can say, oh, maybe we can get together at Christmas. But what's the get together? 10 people? Look at the size of your family. Look at the size of most families.
Yeah.
You know, it's my immediate family. I mean, or I guess they're not immediate. That would just be Maria, me, David, and Daniel. But when you take in cousins and everybody that we always see at Christmas, it's 20, 30 people.
Yeah.
And that's not happening this year. And we can all huddle. We can all live in our quarantine homes. You're still not going to be allowed to have the big Christmas you've always had.
And you may have to make a decision, and it'll be a very difficult one. As to, you know, for instance, your family, you know, you normally get the brother-in-law and the younger kids and the sort of together. If the numbers are better by then, you may say, okay, well, let's do this. But, you know, your mother-in-law,
mm-hmm.
which may not be a horrible thing for you.
this might work out in my favor.
Might not be a real sacrifice, but, you know, she's older, perhaps immunocompromised. This may be one of the ones that's more at risk. Maybe she's excluded.
Well, she never would be, though. This is an Italian family.
I understand.
They're not going to exclude her.
But listen, my family goes through the same thing, right? You know, we didn't see my parents for Thanksgiving, which is a rarity. It'd be horrible to think that we wouldn't be able to see them for Christmas. But if that's what it comes down to, because they are. That's my situation.
Right.
You know, I understand it's not everyone's. And there are other people who have not seen their parents in 8-9 sure. months now.
Yeah, I haven't seen my dad since I saw him in the summer. He's another one. I don't know what we're going to do about him with Christmas. I mean, if we have my son coming back at the end of November in the whole quarantine thing, and then he's going to leave before, it's a mess. It's all a complete and utter mess. Not for everybody, though. Some rich people are apparently buying waterfront homes just for a place to park their yachts in Florida. That's because boat sales have surged during the pandemic, so there's a shortage of slips.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a problem.
Do they get to buy a house just so they get the slip?
Yeah. There's a problem I can relate to. On the most recent David Letterman, my next guest needs no introduction. He only gives us four episodes. Robert Downey Jr., Dave Chappelle. But the first one is Kim Kardashian.
Right.
And I'm torn because I am a huge fan of David Letterman. I admire that man.
I really want to watch the Chappelle one.
Yeah, I've watched the Robert Downey, or most of it, and I did watch the Kardashian one. And I'm torn because I don't like the fact that he gives her any platform.
Right.
Because I find all of them to be just stomach-churning most of the time. And as much as she tries to put this spin on herself now as this this enlightened woman who's out there, you know, soldiering on for she's studying the in California there's like a fast track to become they call it like a baby bar is basically what you go through.
And okay,
I don't know if you become a full fledged lawyer or you become some kind of like paralegal or something. I'm not sure. Anyhow, this is her new cause. And as much as I applaud, she helped that one woman get out of prison who had been there for decades on a small drug charge. I mean, I applaud that. Sure, that's fine. But
yeah.
But it's all the other shenanigans that surround that crazy family that I think for most of us turn our stomach. And I was a little disappointed in David Letterman that he gave her the platform. Anyhow, that being said, she once again proves my point. When she does this crazy humble brag, you know, read the room. The country you live in is falling apart. People are dying. People are going into poverty.
They say 500,000 cases in the last week.
Yeah, of COVID. But she just turned 40. And she says, I'm feeling so humbled and blessed. There's not a single day that I take it for granted, especially during these times. Before COVID, I don't think any of us truly appreciated what a simple luxury it was to be able to travel and be together with family, friends, in a safe environment. After 2 weeks of multiple health screens and quarantining, I surprised my closest inner circle with a trip to a private island where we could pretend things were normal for just a brief moment in time. We danced, we rode bikes, we swam near whales, we kayaked. Watched a movie. How does she fit that big arse in a kayak? We watched movies on the beach and so much more. I realize that for most people, this is something that is far out of reach right now. No, it's far out of reach forever.
Right.
For most people. So in moments like these, I'm humbled, reminded of how privileged my life is. How tone deaf is she?
Right.
So people start in honor, of course. One person says, this year has humbled most of us, too, especially the 8 million of us that slipped into poverty. Glad your birthday was fun, though. Others said, I can't even hug my mom, but I'm glad you got to go to a private island and do whatever you wanted. I'm really happy for you. My dad died. We couldn't have a funeral. But it's just, like, as she's sitting there typing this, or maybe she doesn't even really, maybe someone does it for her. You know, when you get, I worked with somebody years ago who shared something with me that I've always followed. If you're walking around in $800 shoes, you don't tell anybody you are. Because most of us can't afford that. If you're driving a luxury vehicle, you keep that to yourself. Because most of us can't. If you can afford things that you know the average family can't, then you shut up about it.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, for her, and this is in no way a defense, but her followers, or those who have given her this platform of popularity, are based on the, you know, on those brags and the jealousy behind it, right? That, you know, oh, the American dream, that is, you know. But, you know, to be honest, she was born into it.
Well, so she's never known anything,
you know,
different.
It is very much like the Trump. You know, the Kardashians and the Trumps are linked in that mystique where, you know, this name is so revered. Maybe one day I could get there. Right.
Oh, that is that American
and
belief.
And watching how they live. I'm so it's like the, you know, and that's why they're called more the American monarchy. Right. You know, that was the British following of it. Oh, you know, these people of royal esteem and royal blood and. You know, in these states, they don't have that history. Instead, they've made monarchy
out of rich. From the Kennedys and beyond, Well, look, she shared on this Letterman interview, she had these hair extensions in, and she claimed that by one tweet or one Instagram photo, she has these hair extensions now for life. And they cost upwards of $250,000. $250,000 for hair extensions. And maybe this is all part of the business, and that maybe she got this island for free. Just an exchange of speaking about it.
We were watching some TV last night. I came across a show that I've never watched before, which is like Million Dollar Listings or something like that. It's basically this real estate thing. Sure. And there's drama that's imparted into it and that sort of thing. But they were showing this house in L.A.
Right.
Up on the hill overlooking, you know, Los Angeles.
Yep.
And they were going to list it for around $40 million. Right. And they were going to have a party that had to, okay, well, how... Let's get some rich people, some billionaires in, ones who would be looking to buy this. And you think, you know, there are actually people who are in the market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's other agents coming around saying, yeah, I've got a family who's looking for a place. This might do it. They really want to stay in the $30 million range, though. And think, holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's one person out there who could buy this house. There's lots of them. It's hard to believe that's the 1%. Sometimes.
Well, because we think 1% is a small number, but when you look at the population of the planet, what do we have, like 7 billion or 70 billion, whatever the number is, you know, 1% of that is still a pretty big number.
It's still 7 million.
Yeah. And a lot of people with a lot of money.
Or is that 10%?
I don't know. That's why we don't
have
any money.
That's a lot of math.
Because we can't do the math. If you're out there dating, meeting people still during COVID, there's terms you got to know. One of them being thrown around these days is COVID worthy. This is a quality a potential match should have before you consider risking a in-person date if they're COVID worthy. Sexual distancing when you pause your sex life so as not to spread the coronavirus. I've done that. Just put a pause on that. A pause button is stuck.
We're not doing it for the better of the community.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Virtual date, a date held on Zoom, FaceTime. Quarantine and chill when you hunker down with a romantic prospect, partly out of boredom, partly out of horniness. Antibody boy, antibody girl, a person who brags about having antibodies on a dating app, hoping it'll lead to more matches.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Is that a line now?
Yeah.
Hey, baby, let me give you my antibodies.
That's right. If you're fully against getting a family pet, better get ready to say no a lot. And I mean a lot. The average kid begs their parents for a puppy or another pet 1,584 times before they turn 18 years of age.
Wow. That's actually not, what, 100 times a year? A little less than 100 times a year?
3/4 of kids have asked for a pet, and they've asked on an average of 11 times a month starting at age 6. During the holidays, it's up to 18 times a month.
We might be at 1,500 just in this pandemic.
Then they get Coop and they turn their back on it. My sister was bad for that. She'd bring pets home all the time, be all over it for about 48 hours. Then the rest of us would get stuck caring for
them. Yeah. Well, it's kind of what our house is like. And now we have this like conversation now that the dog is here.
Right.
And they do, you know, love it. They take care of it. They pick up after it, which I was shocked at.
Right.
If you tell them to.
Like they'll pick up the poop and get rid of it?
If you tell them to.
Yeah, of course, right.
But
I'd have to be told now, even at this age.
But for some reason, kids only really want to deal with the pet when it's quiet.
Mm.
Right? Like what? Like the thing will be running around tearing a strip off the floor. And they'll want nothing to do with it. It'll be chasing toys. Like when it wants to play,
right?
They want nothing to do with it. It gets tired out, lies down, settles for like a second.
Yeah.
Then they jump into the room and they want to cuddle. Like the amount of times I've said, "Let sleeping dogs lie."
That's right. He's quiet for a second.
Leave him alone.
The persistence of begging for a pet usually pays off. 2/3 of parents eventually give in and get a pet within 3 years. You hung in there longer than 3 years.
Oh, much longer, yeah.
The top pet, of course, is by far a dog. Then the rest are cat, fish, bird, rabbit.
Mm.
You should start off like that. I think we, with our boys, we never got a dog. Well, we got Murphy, but only because we had to. But I think we got out of it by starting them off with like hamsters and this kind of thing.
Yes.
You know,
I didn't want a rat in my house.
Easier to deal
with. And I don't understand the bird either. I've never been a bird fan.
We got Maria's mom, and I don't know what the hell we were thinking years ago. We got her a couple of these love doves or whatever the hell they're called. These things just chirped constantly, and they ended up, my mother-in-law said, get them away from me. They ended up at our place in Caledon, and we're living in 800 square feet with these two birds. I feel bad now when I look back. Because anytime it was daylight, they were chirping.
Right.
So we'd stick them in the closet where it was dark all the time.
See, the dog is a loving animal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Any other of these animals, you know, if you pass out in front of it, will claw your eyes out at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
You die beside these animals, they are eating at you.
Except maybe a parrot.
No.
Maybe a parrot will eat you as well.
It'll still nip away. It'll just squawk.
Right. Yeah, they say a dog won't, that a dog will sit by your side.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to find out.
No.
But yeah. Yeah. It's like the people who have the snakes. And I don't need to hear from you. I'm sure they're very loving to you.
Oh, yeah. Remember we met that one assassin was its name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're loving pet assassin. Yeah.
I used to love with my buddy when I was a kid. He had a couple of snakes, and he would just get off on feeding it live mice so he could watch it torture the mouse. That's a loving pet. This is great news for anybody like myself who probably thinks they should go get a sleep apnea test.
Right.
Because I am, I'm one to believe in science. I am a science-believing guy. I'm on the side of science. But on this topic, I believe that they are just trying to sell me a kit. And so I've avoided it for a long time. Although the lovely Maria says my snoring was a lot worse in the past when I was heavier. I've dropped some weight over the years. And when I was tipping over 200 pounds, I was snoring a lot. She claims that it's not as bad as it once was, but I can still get going pretty good some nights. Anyhow, this is great for me or anybody who has the sleep apnea and, you know, has a tough time wearing the gear. There is a pill that is supposedly on the way that will prevent snoring. It's a combination of two non-sleep drugs. One is a drug for ADHD and the other is used to treat people with overactive bladders. A study found that when both drugs were combined, it reduced snoring by 74% and people with sleep apnea have higher blood oxygen levels when they take it. So a new drug company in Massachusetts is doing a full trial to make sure it's safe.
Wow. Okay.
Can't get this COVID done, but we might be able to get the snoring out of the way.
I was going to say, is the pill just a massive block you put in your mouth to keep your mouth open?
So you, a man who does have sleep apnea and wears the mask.
I've been wearing the mask for like a dozen years now.
Wow. Would you even feel safe taking a pill and sleeping without it?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll know right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's to the point now. And I hear you. I was one where, like, when I got mine in, like, 2007 or 8 or something like that, like, my parents had been both diagnosed with it.
Mm.
I think every uncle in my family had one, some aunts, too. Like, they were pushing these things out like hotcakes.
Right.
And I thought, okay, there's something going on.
Yeah.
Right? Like you. And I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but it did certainly feel like, okay, this is the hot thing to prescribe, and everyone's getting one.
Right.
And then I went for the test. And when I did the test, I remember, like, if you haven't done it, many people have, but if you haven't done it, they hook about 90 wires and sensors up to you.
Yeah, my dad did
it. All around your head, body, legs, arms, everywhere has got sensors. And you basically lie down in this, you know, lab, which made it to look like a cheap motel room, and have what you think is the worst sleep of your life.
Mm.
Because it's not a comfortable environment.
Sure.
You can't move, you can't roll, you have to ask to get up to go to the bathroom.
You know you're being observed.
You know you're being observed. You're also, like, you know, like, there's other people in this building as well, all going, like, it's not just you doing a test at once. There's probably, like, 8-10 people who are sleeping. No, not like wards. You have your own room. But regardless, I thought I had the worst sleep of my life.
I'm surprised anybody gets any sleep. What with all the snoring of everybody, you think you'd all keep each other awake?
Well, that's right. Yeah, maybe they really soundproof the walls.
Yeah.
In this one, but you know, in the end, the test came back that, you know, I was stopping breathing for, you know, a significant amount of time. Like, the number of times I stopped breathing, you know, like 70 something times in that test. And for an average of, like, almost 30 seconds.
See, again, I would be, and my thinking would be, well, you're just telling me this. You're just telling me this to sell me a mask.
Well, no, but they show you.
Well, I can show you a chart of a lot of things. I can say, look, every night, all night, 70 times, you flick your head left and right.
Right.
Look at the chart.
Well, the one that really gets you is probably the EKG.
Right.
Because they show you the spikes in your heart rate when you stop breathing, and when you gasp back, and it's not, everyone thinks it's just a loud snore. It's not the loud snoring.
Mm.
It's the noise after the snore, and if you hear that, and then silence, that's the apnea. That's you stopping breathing,
right?
And that's the spike in the heart rate. And then, you know, in the end, I got it, and since I've had it, I sleep so much better,
right?
With it, I must admit. Now, if I take this pill that, you know, if it were to be approved, I would know right away if I had a good night's sleep or a bad night's sleep. Because if I try sleeping without it right now, it's a horrible night's sleep.
But you're, outside of the apnea, your routine of sleep is pretty high level.
Oh,
windows open, fans on, certain mattress, mouth gear, head gear, pajamas, pillow under legs.
Yes,
like here's my routine. Underwear, down to underwear, under the sheet, out cold. Windows closed, lights off.
Hang on. You're skipping the trip to the LCBO.
Oh, I've had a jug of red. That probably gets me into bed. But it must take you, on average, a good hour just to organize yourself for sleep.
Not quite. But I do enjoy it.
So we got what, apnea mask,
right?
Mouth guard, window open, fan going.
Well, not window open necessarily because Karen's screaming in the back.
Fan going.
Yes.
Don't you have something else? Don't you have a white noise thing or something?
No,
the fan.
That's the apnea machine.
That's the apnea machine.
That does that for me. But you got to put water into that, so that's part of the routine as well. Don't forget that. You got to fill that jug. A pillow under my legs for my back, a special pillow for my neck because of my back.
Come on!
And,
I hadn't even heard of that one.
And if I'm napping, the weighted blanket.
Oh, for crying out loud, you pampered prince. I'm going to start calling you Kim Kardashian. You're unbelievable.
Rock Mornings with Craig Venn and Lucky. 94.9 The Rock.